I'm Matt Bush with BPR News. I'm speaking with Asheville Citizen Times reporter Joel Burgess. Joel, it's been a while. Thanks so much for coming on.
It's great to be here.
So you were at the first day of the retreat in person at Asheville City Council, but covered both days. The retreat this year held at Harris Cherokee Center, Asheville, because of the pandemic. We'll get into this first. There's obviously first this lawsuit about how much the media was allowed to be in there, how much it was going to be open to the public. But before we do that, tell us what the retreat is. This is something City Council does every year. Tell us what the retreat is.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, City Council, again, is the governing body for Asheville. And what they have traditionally done, and a lot of governing bodies do this for cities and counties across the state, is they will have an annual meeting where they kind of huddle and talk about sort of big long-term goals. A lot of their meetings are occupied with things that have to be decided pretty quickly, but this is a time they get back and sort of strategize and say, hey, here's what we'd like to see the city aim for over the next year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever. I always, and I'll just as an aside, I always find it an interesting exercise, and it's probably a good idea to do these types of things, though it can often be thwarted by reality, meaning that things happen, events happen, pandemics happen, protests happen that suddenly jar the city and can sort of shake up those priorities. But anyway, that's what an annual retreat is.
So on the first day of this retreat, it included a team building exercise. Now, initially, that was not going to be open to the public. Five media organizations in Asheville, including both of our organizations, Mountain Express as well, and ABL Watchdog and Carolina Public Press, brought this lawsuit to open this up to the public. And eventually it was ruled right before the day before the retreat that that happened. So it was open to the public. It was not live streamed, at least, to the team building exercise, but you were there in person. So tell us what this team building exercise was, and how did it go, and what did it really focus on?
That was fascinating because you had the majority of the council is actually new. They were either newly elected, or in the case of Councilwoman Antoinette Mosley, newly appointed. And so a lot of it was this concept of how do we get the council to just sort of function together. And again, I find that to be an interesting exercise because as a body, it's not necessarily their role to work as a team. I mean, they vote on things and then the majority wins, like in any governing body, and that's the decision. But what was happening is that the mayor was at least trying to get them to, if they were going to disagree about things, have a way to express it early, to have a degree of civility, to allow them to communicate better so that, and I'm trying to remember, there was a great sort of segue from Gwen Whistler, who at one time was the vice mayor. And she was saying, look, it's fine if you're going to essentially blast me in public, but just let me know ahead of time. You know, that's what she was asking for and saying, hey, if you're going to go to the media, maybe just tell us, hey, here's a stand I'm going to take. I'm going to disagree with all you guys. I'm not going to be part of this vote, but I will, but I'm going to let you know ahead of time. So it's sort of just, they're trying to establish just some ground rules and maybe some, you know, a sense of decorum, I guess it might be the term, for the council. And so it was very interesting. And they had some facilitators who came in and worked with them on this. And, you know, one thing they realized is that they are facing a pretty interesting and historic time in Asheville.
The team building exercise was also one of the reasons that it was initially supposed to be closed to the public, was that it would allow them to talk more personally, or reveal personal information or personal feelings and all that sort of stuff about themselves and maybe about their fellow council members. Did anything like that come up?
Absolutely. And well, the interesting thing is, yeah, they said, look, you know, we're just going to be talking about personal things. It's not necessarily about conducting the public business. And I've just got to talk a little bit about the lawsuit and open records law. And that is what the law talks about. The law talks about if the governing body is getting together to conduct public business, then it has to be open to the public, like unless it meets this specific definition of a closed meeting. And those are things like if you're going to talk about an employee and talk about their you know, their performance or things like that, there's a certain amount of privacy given to them. Or if they're going to get advice from their attorney, there's sort of this attorney-client privilege. And they said, well, you know, this isn't going to be a closed meeting. And it's also going to be, we're not going to be doing public business. We're just going to kind of talk about ourselves. Well, I don't know if what they did talk about was originally what they planned to talk about, but there certainly was some policymaking aspects. And one of the interesting things was sort of, who do you represent? Who do you feel like you're speaking for? And I'll bring up Antoinette Mosley again. She's one of the Black council members who have joined the council recently. And she said, I'm here to represent, you know, Black residents, Black women residents, and actually Black Native women residents. And so they kind of got into some of those things and personally why they started to get into public service. And a little bit about, you know, here's who I am, here's how I feel. But there was definitely some things that I think related to public policy and what they talked about.
And certainly where people are coming from and how they view themselves and representing clearly is going to affect policy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you mentioned that it comes at this very interesting time. And I believe part of the discussions there, the mayor said something along the lines of, this is a very different city, certainly different than when she was first elected in 2013, or first took the office in 2013. So let's talk about that. What was the talking about where Asheville is right now and where it's going to be in the future? Because it is a very changing city because of population growth and its national profile.
I think that people that have been here long enough, they could probably just start ticking off on both hands, you know, how has Asheville changed? If we remember folks that have been here in the 90s, the story is, and we all saw it, that a lot of downtown was boarded up. Cost of living was low, wages were kind of low. And then really it became a tourist mecca, and property costs went up. The wages necessarily have not gone up. We have seen the impacts of that differently on different communities. Asheville's Black residents really have maybe borne the brunt of a lot of these changes. And we've seen a lot of outflow of Black residents, people largely young African Americans who have left the city. We've seen that population decline. We've seen, of course, that's tied in with what's happening nationally in terms of a reckoning is the word that's often used about racial justice. That is certainly happening in Asheville. We're seeing a really big rise in homelessness. And again, that's not unique to Asheville, though I think we are seeing a lot of it. And that's attributed in large part to the pandemic. And there's traffic now, which is interesting, and there's talk about growing pains in that way. There's an emphasis on public transit. Are we going to be able to really grow a transit system that helps everyone? The city is going to get $26 million, and now we've recently learned maybe a little bit more from this COVID aid passed by the feds and signed by the president. What are they going to do with it? It's really unprecedented, the amount of money, the amount of aid that is going to be flowing in both to Asheville and to Buncombe County. So it's just a very strange, odd, and historic time for the city and those in a lot of other ways.
So were they beginning to discuss policy? I mean, were there anything that was really maybe tipping their hand as to where it might go? They're obviously coming up on budget season here, so we're going to get to that over the next few months. But is there anything that's really tipping the hand here because of, you know, this is a year after the killing of George Floyd and the protests were coming up on that. There were a lot of budgetary demands made by the people who marched last year. So what sort of policy, I don't know, directions did anything come out of this retreat, I guess, that indicated where the policy directions for the city lawmakers may be going?
For one thing, the reparations program is high up there in terms of priorities. And if folks remember, that was passed back in July. It was a historic vote. There were very few local governments that were talking about reparations back then. Evanston, Illinois, is one of them that is slightly ahead of Asheville. Well, they're more than slightly. They've actually gone ahead and set up a payment program to help residents, Black residents, with housing. But Asheville really helped kick off the discussion about reparations with that July vote. And now the question is, will the city and county, which has joined the city council, follow through? And what will that follow through be? And what will it look like? And how will it be shaped? And so that's really the main focus of the city council going forward, is how are we gonna do this? Now, I will say there have been some steps that have been taken. For example, as many people know, there was a moratorium on the allowing new hotels for more than a year. It was supposed to be a year, but because of the pandemic, it was extended. And the city council was trying to figure out what kind of new rules to come up with. And that's the reason you can have a moratorium in North Carolina. You have to have some rules that you're trying to get at. And what they decided was, because you can't ban hotels outright, state law just would not allow that, even though that's what a lot of people wanted. They wanted no more hotels. They have felt we have reached a point of over-tourism. What the city has said is, look, if hotels will pay or participate in what we'll call a public benefits program, they will get an expedited approval process. In other words, they won't have to come to the city council. They can just deal with city staff and maybe some volunteer boards. And part of those public benefits is a reparations fund. So basically, hoteliers can pay into this reparations fund. So hotels will help be funding it if they want to do this. So an interesting thing that came out of this retreat is that, well, that public benefits idea might be extended to other types of development, large housing developments. So really, you could have these high-end condo and housing developments that might be facing a similar choice. They might say, hey, instead of trying to go through this larger political process of getting passed through the city council, if we pay into a reparations fund or some other kind of public benefit, then we can get through the process more easily. And so that was something that came out in terms of reparations. But some of the keys will be what will be done with money. What are some of the ideas? One of the basic themes of reparations has been to try to increase generational wealth for Black residents. And that's something that African Americans all over the country, have struggled with compared to other groups.
Take us through where the city is now right now with reparations, and then we can go into whether it comes into this budget. But they're also doing this public process now. They're talking about a lot the history of it, why reparations are needed in Nashville's history. So tell us where that stands right now.
Right. So the process will be, they've decided it's going to be something they call truth telling, where they're going to be pulling together people from the community. So people who have a lived experience, you could say, local experts, historians, people that can talk about what happened in Asheville in the past before anyone was alive, and talk about, the harms that were done. And that is what will be used to start to bring together an idea for different programs. So housing and businesses looks like it may be a focus. How can we help Black residents become homeowners? Because as we know, when you own a home, you have equity, you have something to hold on to that can often be passed on to the next generation. The same for businesses, and businesses are a different type of way to grow wealth. So it feels like that those will be a focus. But again, they've got this process, this sort of truth-telling process. And I've even heard some people relate it to South Africa's famous Truth and Reconciliation Commission, where the idea is to just air all of these grievances and talk about all these harms that happened over generations, and then use it to try to once those things are aired and once everyone feels like they've had their say, to move forward. It's not a fast process. And so there's a tension between trying to do what city manager Deborah Campbell has said is the right way to do it, and also from activists who are saying, let's see some movement, let's see some things happen. One thing that people have heard activists call for is police defunding. And there's a big question out there right now as to what that means going forward. Deborah Campbell, and again, Campbell, or I don't know if I said Campbell is the first African-American city manager for Asheville, has said that she will not, quote unquote, defund police, but she wants to look at a program called Reimagining Public Safety. I don't know if she's coined that term or what, but I think another way that it's been put is divest and invest. The city did a little bit of that. You could say dip their toe into it with a small decrease in the police budget that basically took services, including noise ordinance enforcement and animal enforcement away from police and put them into different departments. The question going forward is, what now? Will there be a reduction in the police budget in order to fund services, some other types of services? And those have been openly talked about. And one thing that's been pointed to is the counties, Buncombe County's program of community paramedics. The concept there is it's somebody who might not necessarily focus on a traditional medical emergency, a heart attack, but somebody who could show up and help somebody who's dealing with a drug addiction issue. There could be an overdose issue. And so there would be, you know, more of a traditional medical emergency, you know, for which Narcan would be administered, which is a overdose reversal drug, but also somebody that can move people toward bettering their lives, towards getting out of a crisis. And that would be, the idea is that is you would substitute that for calling police to somebody who's having a mental health crisis. And because, you know, when an officer shows up in uniform, that officer oftentimes, you know, is a symbol of different things to somebody who might be going through a crisis. Maybe that person had a bad experience with police before. Maybe that officer isn't trained and knowing how to deal with certain types of situations and has a limited amount of tools. And so there is this concept of, again, divest and invest that the city council is looking at. And that also is a high priority from that came out of the retreat. They're also looking at what's interesting is an increase in salaries for city employees, because right now a study that was recently done for the city said that they have an 18% turnover rate among their roughly 1,200 person workforce. So the raises recommended would come to $9 million, which is kind of steep. So the concept is, you know, how do we implement that? Do we implement all of it? And the, again, some of the priorities, I'll repeat some of the priorities. Really, we saw a lot of racial justice issues bubble to the top, I would say, with the city council. And so that's an ongoing theme that has been amplified by the protests and general reckoning, again, I'll use that word, that the United States and that North Carolina and Asheville is having with issues of race and disparity and general fairness and justice.
So just again, going back to the timeline on this, is something going to come, this truth-telling process that Asheville's going through right now, and some of the other things, is any of that going to be finished by the time this most current budget needs to be finished over the summer? Will we see any big strides forward on reparations in this upcoming budget, or is that something really kind of gets pushed to next year?
That's a great question. I do not think you are going to see massive changes in terms of reparations, because the program that Deborah Campbell is pushing is one that is much more gradual. The budget year starts July 1. So the city council will need to have something passed before then. I think June 22nd is the current date. Here is the thing hanging out there, though, is what about the police budget? Police have seen a large amount of turnover since the protests, and activists are still calling for a reduction in police funding. And Deborah Campbell has not answered whether she anticipates there to be any reduction in police budget. Maybe there'll just be a line holding in terms of police budget. In other words, not an increase. We don't know yet. So that is a question mark out there. That will be answered by this next budget year.
Last question is also something a lot of people have been talking about. It also is a sign of Asheville's growth, and that is property taxes. And this week at the Tuesday meeting, sort of where the plan on where we might be going with property taxes in Asheville was introduced. So tell us what was introduced this week.
That's right. So this year is a very confusing year because it's a revaluation year, and everybody that owns property and even people that don't may know that the county sent out assessors all over Buncombe And what they did is they gave basically the government's estimate on what your property is worth. And that has to happen at least every 8 years, but it also happens more frequently if the market gets out of, if sort of the government assessed values get out of whack with the market, which you can imagine has happened at Nashville just because the market is pushing up so high. So again, it's a confusing year because if Asheville and Buncombe County, for example, and they both set tax rates, if they, it's possible that they could lower their tax rates and you could still see a pretty substantial tax bill increase because your property value jumped up. So in 2003, the North Carolina State Legislature passed a law that called on these local governments to declare a revenue neutral rate. And the idea there is to show residents, property owners, what the rate would be for the government to bring in the same amount of revenue year to year, plus an increase for new construction that's been built. And that gives you a benchmark. That way you can say, oh, if you don't lower the rate to this, then you're essentially giving me a property tax increase. Well, on April 13th, during a city council budget work session, the new permanent Asheville CFO, Tony McDowell, talked about this revenue neutral rate. And it sounds like they're leaning toward it. Now, I will say I had a discussion on April 14th with Tony McDowell, and he clarified and backed away from it a little bit and said, look, the assumption is more academic at this point. We will tell people what the revenue neutral rate is, but it is possible that the city council may come back and say, you know what, we need more revenue and we're going to look to property tax for it. So it is possible that that rate could creep up over revenue neutral. So again, look for a revenue neutral rate to be published or at least come out sometime soon from the city. And what that will allow people to do is to at least do a calculation and say, I take this rate and I take my property value that the government has given me, that the county has given me. You take that property value, you divide it by 100, and you multiply it by the rate, and that tells you your annual tax bill. I know that's confusing. We have done a story that talks, that kind of walks you through the equation. You can check it out at citizentimes.com if you want. And but also people can just pay attention and wait and see.